Helen's taking pictures of her. Are you going to put it on Facebook now? If you're not on Facebook and you're not a friend of Baby Basics, then you should be. Yeah, Helen said you should be. I'm standing up here because there's some people behind the pillar, and if I stand down there, they won't see me. Did you hear what Aaron said then? You can go and sit behind the pillar if you want, Aaron. Great. I want you to turn in your Bible with me to Daniel. Hopefully it'll be on the screen. Daniel chapter 1. Ethan's on the computer today. First time. First time on his own there on the computer. Well done, Ethan. And I want to just, while I'm saying that, I want to just big up those guys on the tech. There's one sitting behind the pillar here and two back there. And they're there every week and they're serving the church. And it's fantastic. You do a great job. And well done. Ethan and Alex and Jim today. Not always them. There's a whole team of people that does that. And they do a really good job and make it possible for us to have words on screen and stream on Facebook and do all of those things at the same time. And I know how it works. And it's not easy for those guys. So buy them a bar of chocolate or something. What was that? Or join the team, Jim says. He'll teach you how to do it. There we go. Anyway, Daniel chapter 1. I want to read to you from Daniel chapter 1. And we're going to read the whole chapter. Most of you will know the story of Daniel quite well. Perhaps not everyone. So it says, during the third year of King Jehoiakim's reign in Judah, King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon came to Jerusalem and besieged it. The Lord gave him victory over King Jehoiakim of Judah and permitted him to take some of the sacred objects from the temple of God. So Nebuchadnezzar took them back to the land of Babylonia and placed them in the treasure house of his God. Then the king ordered Aspenaz, his chief of staff, to bring to the palace some of the young men of Judah's royal family and other noble families who had been brought to Babylon as captives. Select only strong, healthy, and good-looking young men, he said. Make sure they're well-versed in every branch of learning and are gifted with knowledge and good judgment and are suited to serve in the royal palace. Train these young men in the language and literature of Babylon. The king assigned them a daily ration of food and wine from his own kitchens. They were to be trained for 3 years and then they would enter royal service. Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah were four of the young men chosen, all from the tribe of Judah. The chief of staff renamed them with these Babylonian names. Daniel was called Belshazzar, Hannah was called Shadrach, Mishael was called Meshach, and Azariah was called Abednego. But Daniel was determined not to defile himself by eating the food and wine given them by the king. He asked the chief of staff for permission not to eat these unacceptable foods. Now God had given the chief of staff both respect and affection for Daniel, but he responded, "I'm afraid of my lord the king who has ordered you to eat this food and wine. If you become pale and thin compared to the other youths your age, I'm afraid the king will have me beheaded." Daniel spoke with the attendant who had been appointed by the chief of staff to look after Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. "Please test us for 10 days on a diet of vegetables and water," Daniel said. "At the end of the 10 days, see how we look compared to the other young men who are eating the king's food. Then make your decision in light of what you see." The attendant agreed to Daniel's suggestion and tested them for 10 days. At the end of the 10 days, Daniel and his three friends looked healthier and better nourished than the young men who had been eating the food assigned to the king by the king. So after that, the attendant fed them only vegetables instead of food and wine prepared for the others. God gave these four young men an unusual aptitude for understanding every aspect of literature and wisdom, and God gave Daniel the special ability to interpret the meaning of visions and dreams. When the training period ordered by the king was completed, the chief of staff brought all the young men to King Nebuchadnezzar. The king talked with them, and no one impressed him as much as Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So they entered royal service. Whenever the king consulted them in any matter requiring wisdom and balanced judgment, he found them 10 times more capable than any of the magicians and enchanters in his entire kingdom. Daniel remained in the royal service until the first year of the king of the reign of King Cyrus. And I'm just going to turn over and read one verse from Romans chapter 12. Verse 2, it says, "Don't copy the behavior and customs of this world, but let God transform you into a new person by changing the way you think. Then you will learn to know God's will for you, which is good and pleasing and perfect." Back in the summer, Ellis was preaching here. For those that don't know, Ellis is our oldest child. He's away now at Bible College, but he was here in the summer. He was preaching, and he spoke about Daniel, and he spoke about the example that he gives to us as believers in Jesus in terms of standing up for what is right and what we believe, but also being influential in our society. And we usually see Daniel as a sort of a shining example of someone who's able to stand up for what he believes. And we often talk about that. Daniel is someone who has stuck to his principles. And as we've read there, we see he's not eating the food that's been sacrificed to idols, which is obviously, in a Jewish terms, not kosher. It's not what he's supposed to be eating. Later in the story, we see how he's praying three times a day, even though he's not supposed to, and the king puts him in the lion's den, and all of that story we know well. His friends, the three friends, won't bow down to an idol that's been set up by the king, and they end up in the fiery furnace. We know those stories well, and in a sense, the whole of the first section of Daniel is all about that, standing for what is right, even though, you know, the pressure is on you to do something else. But I think that's only half the story. And, you know, it's not only that they stood up for what is right, but it's that second part which says, and they gained acceptance, in a sense, by the king. It says that Daniel was in the king's service right through, actually it was several different kings, right through until King Cyrus. It's at least 65 years that Daniel was at the center of government of the biggest empire in the world at that time. He's right there. One of the chief advisors. At times, he is the chief advisor. When Belshazzar's king and his dad's somewhere else, Daniel's the third in the kingdom. So Belshazzar's like the prince, if you like, and the story is there in Daniel. You can read it. Daniel's the third in the kingdom. So he's got this authority that he has gained from being loyal to the king, but at the same time, we see that he's loyal first to God. And so this, in a sense, for us this morning and over the next 2 weeks, we'll be looking at this in church and in our connect groups. How can we live in our world loyal to the King of Kings whilst being influential in our society? And that doesn't always come easily. And of course, our first loyalty is to Jesus. But actually, we want to be people that have influence in our culture, our community. Daniel is almost a unique story because he's able to remain faithful to God while literally being the heart of government. Pat Finlow, who most of you will know, she's written a lot. She wrote a PhD about the influence of Christian charities, and so she's really an expert on this and goes speaking at conferences everywhere. But she wrote something once. It says this: the church turned down the volume of faith to get a place at the table. And what she's talking about is charities, not talking so much about faith, but she says it's time to turn the volume back up. Daniel managed influence at court without turning the volume down. He was always standing for what is right, always standing for the truth, and yet somehow managed not to be offending people, not to be condemning people, because that's the danger when we stand for truth, is that we're condemning, that we're offending, but somehow he managed not to. So I want us to be looking in the next couple of weeks at how did he do that? What was it in Daniel's life that helped him to manage that? Tim Farron, who was the leader of the Liberal Democrats, resigned from that position because he said, I cannot do both. I can't lead a political party and be loyal to what I believe. And so he stood down. It's a tough thing to do in our society. And yet Daniel somehow manages to do this. And so what I'm going to do is this morning, just begin to unpack a little bit if this first chapter of Daniel. And the first thing I want to say is he recognized the threat. The threat for him was to compromise his belief, was to not stand for what was right for him as a Jewish boy. And he's been carried away to Babylon. If you don't know the story, for many hundreds of years, the prophets have been warning Israel and Judah, if you don't follow God, if you continue to turn away from God, I will take you into exile. And of course, the story we know is they did not continue to follow God and ended up in exile. And this story we read is the southern Jewish kingdom. They're being carried away to Babylon in exile. I've been watching Michael Palin in Iraq the last couple of weeks. I don't know if you've seen that on TV. Definitely worth watching. But talking about being at the cradle of civilization, Iraq, Babylon as it was then, the cradle of civilization. This is the most sophisticated culture in the world of the day. They know what it means to have libraries and poetry and arts and learning and education. It's all there. And this is the first society that we really see it in world history. And that is where Daniel and his friends, they're taken away. And they're given 3 years of schooling in the culture of Babylon. And these kingdoms, the Assyrian kingdom before it and the Babylonian kingdom, have developed this system of assimilating people to their culture. So they take the leaders and they assimilate them into their own culture. They want Daniel and his friends to be Jewish leaders, but in Babylonian culture. They want them to adopt Babylonian culture and then pass that on to those that they lead in the Jewish community. That is the plan of Babylon. And so Daniel and his friends are earmarked for greatness. The king says to his chief of staff, find the best of the young leaders of Israel and bring them here, and we're going to train them in the ways of Babylon. And I want to say we need to have Christians in positions of influence in our society, in the government, in media, in the police force, in the arts, in our schools. But it must come on our terms, not the terms of the world. We must not be compromising what we believe because of where we work or what we do or the influence we're trying to have. Somehow Daniel manages to do that. Daniel 1 verse 8 says, Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine, and he asked the chief of staff permission to not to defile himself in this way. You know, Daniel and his friends, they knew they were chosen. They knew why they were chosen. They knew what they were chosen for. And they probably knew the scheme of the Babylonians. They want us to take on their culture and pass it on to our people. They could have said, we'll do whatever it takes to get a position of influence at the highest table. They could have said, it doesn't matter if we compromise with that bit of food and wine. We know that the idols it sacrificed aren't real anyway. But they chose not to. They resolved themselves not to compromise because they recognized the threat. It's the thin end of the wedge. If you start with the little things, the big things follow. And this is the thing, the plan for the Babylonians was to cause them to lose their identity as the people of God. To lose their identity as the people of God. To start to say, I'm first a Babylonian and second a Jew. The first thing that the king does is give them a new name. The meaning of Daniel is God is my judge. Jehovah is my judge. Meaning of Hananiah is Yahweh has been gracious. Mishael is who is what God is. And Azariah is Yahweh has helped. They're all names that honor Jehovah, Yahweh. They're all names that point to him. The names that they're given, Belshazzar, the name Daniel's given is Bel will protect. It's a Babylonian god. Shadrach is inspired of Aku, another Babylonian god. Meshach, belonging to Aku. And Abednego, servant of Nego. They're all names that point to Babylonian gods, to the idol worship that is there. And these names that glorify gods, they're given names instead that glorify the Babylonian gods. The first thing that they're trying to do is cause them to lose their identity, to change their name. You know, in the Bible, this often happens in reverse. Abraham, which means something like father, is changed to Abraham, father of many. Saul is changed to Paul. When God gives them a new name to tell them who they're going to be. And that's what the Babylonians are trying to do. They're trying to give them a name which changes their identity, not only their name, but who they are. And that's what the danger is for Daniel and his three friends. That's what the danger is for us, that we lose our identity as children of God and become just like our culture, just like our society. Because the attack is still on our identity. Am I made in the image of God? Or did I evolve from a fish? Am I born into the family of God? Or are we all one human race? Am I a child of God, or am I a child of the world? Am I a citizen of the kingdom of heaven, or a citizen of the world? Europe, UK, Folkestone, pick your whichever one you want. This is what Peter says. 1 Peter 2, verse 9 to 11. But you are not like that, for you are a chosen people. You are royal priests, a holy nation, God's very own possession. As a result, you can show others the goodness of God, for he called you out of the darkness into his wonderful light. Once you had no identity as a people, now you are God's people. Once you received no mercy, now you have received God's mercy. Dear friends, I warn you as temporary residents and foreigners to keep away from worldly desires that wage war against your very soul. Be careful to live properly among your unbelieving neighbors. Then even if they accuse you of doing wrong, they will see your honorable behavior and they will give honor to God when he judges the world. Peter's writing to people who have come out of the world's culture. Once you were this, now you are people of God. It's sort of the opposite of Daniel. Daniel, they are the people of God and they're trying to be pulled into the world. He's writing to people that have come out of the world into the kingdom of God. And we've got to remember that that is who we are. And the world would wage war to get us back to where we once were. So we have to recognize that the attack on our identity as the children of God is fierce. And we first have to recognize that threat. And that's what Daniel and his friends did. They recognized and they said, I'm not going to compromise. He resolved not to eat the food and the wine. He resolved. And so the second point is, well, first we recognize the threat. The second thing is, we've got to do something about it. We've got to consciously reject the culture of the world. Romans 12 verse 2 I read says, don't copy the behavior and customs of this world, but let God transform you into a new person by changing the way you think. Then you will learn to know what God's will is. You will learn to know God's will for you, which is good, pleasing, and perfect. Again, Paul is writing to people that have come out of the world's culture into the kingdom of God. And he says, don't copy the world. Don't go back there, but be set free from that because your thinking changes. Because what's going here changes. Let God transform you by the way you think. The danger is the opposite of that the world transforms the way we think to thinking like the culture around us. We have to consciously and deliberately change our way of thinking. It won't just happen. How do you change the way that you think? Well, I want to ask you, what do you put in your head? What goes in your ears and in your eyes? What do you watch? What do you listen to? What do you read? There's a phrase, isn't there? Garbage in, garbage out. Well, I want to just turn that on. It says, if you get pure coming in, you get pure coming out. Philippians 4 verse 8, Paul writes to the church there. And now, dear brothers and sisters, one final thing. Fix your thoughts on what is true and honorable and right and pure and lovely and admirable. Think about things that are excellent and worthy of praise. Keep putting into practice all you've learned and received from me, everything you heard from me and saw me doing. Then the God of peace will be with you. If one thing goes home with you this morning, fix your thoughts on whatever is true and honorable and right and pure and lovely and admirable. Think about things that are excellent and worthy of praise. If we do that, it will transform our thinking. And too many of us, myself included, watch stuff on the telly that is not pure and honorable and holy and, you know, that I've just read, or listen to music or read articles or whatever it is. Now, I'm not saying don't listen to the news and all that stuff, because you need to know, but I want to say, you know, if you're putting too much of that stuff in, it will change your thinking to the way of the world's thinking. And I've been this week in the news and all the financial stuff that's going on and all of those things, and I'm incredibly frustrated by that, because the culture of the world puts a spin on it that is just not healthy or helpful. And the result is one person sells their pounds and another person thinks, well, I better do that as well, and it ends up that everyone follows each other into a ditch. They're all following the same thinking, the same pattern. And that's just an example from this week. And I watch the news and listen to the radio and shout at the TV and all of that stuff. Feed your mind on what is good, what is right, what is holy. I wonder if Daniel and his friends, as they've been taken from Judah, kidnapped, and they're probably being taken in chains, throwing a camel across the desert. I wonder if they're having a conversation about how do we stay pure? How do we stay holy? We know what they're going to do. They're going to try and influence us. They're going to try and make us like them and then get us to make our people like them. I wonder if that's what they were talking about. I somehow imagine that they were preparing themselves as they traveled for what was ahead of them. That they were getting them, resolving themselves. It says Daniel resolved. Have you thought about how you're going to avoid the moment of testing ahead? How you're going to stick to your guns when somebody asks you or puts pressure on you at work or whatever is going on. Daniel was proactive. He didn't just try and sort of hide the meat and not eat it, leave it on his plate. When I was at school, I used to try and put the things I didn't like under my knife and fork. Can you believe that? They used to make us eat everything. Those of you at school now, they don't, yeah. They used to like sit and watch us and make us eat everything. I used to hide the mushy peas under the knife and fork in a line and put the knife, hopefully I'd get away with it. Why did I say that? Oh, they didn't try to sneakily avoid it. They went directly to the chief of staff. They said, let us not eat this stuff. And he wasn't really going for it, but his deputy, whoever was in charge of feeding them, said, yeah, you can try it for 10 days. And then they did it. But they weren't hiding what they were up to. They didn't try and keep a low profile and hope nobody noticed. Are we ready? It must have been a huge temptation to compromise. Imagine the best food by the best chefs in the world, in the Babylonian kings. This is the greatest empire in the world at the time. That must have been some temptation to turn down. They're eating vegetables while those around them, probably sitting at the same table. Imagine that. And imagine the mickey taking from those others. Ah, look what we've got today. And you're eating cabbage. See, the first battleground is your mind. Daniel resolved. And Romans there, we need to be transformed by the renewing of our mind. Have we resolved to be faithful and to resist the culture of the world? The third thing that I just want to point out of this chapter, really, although this is a bit later in the book, is that Daniel is constantly refreshing his relationship with God. He's constantly refreshing the culture of the kingdom. Three times a day he goes to pray. It was his habit. We read later on that got him in trouble. It was his habit to go to the presence of God, to kneel down, open his window, face towards Jerusalem and pray. Three times a day. I doubt there's anyone here like that. Maybe. You know, I'm lucky if I'm doing it once a day. Years ago, Anna will remember this. I think, she's upstairs. Years ago, we were at Spree, which is an Urban Saints camp for kids, a weekend camp. And we were running the little venue, the 8 to 11-year-olds venue. There were about 300 kids with us. And so before our first meeting, we got all the leaders together in a tent, and we were explaining what we'd be doing. And part of what we were doing was we're going to be singing songs with them. And one of the leaders asked a question. Basically, they said, we don't agree with singing songs with the kids. It's brainwashing them. And for once, I had that moment. You know, normally you get that moment where you think of the answer too late. For once, I got the answer at the right moment, because a few weeks before, Anna had been on a school trip with the kids from her school at Benenden. And this will tell you how long ago it was. 1997, I looked up. There was a song in the church that was, I Want to Have Sex on the Beach. And she said that some kids started singing, and soon the whole coach load of kids, primary school kids, were singing, I Want to Have Sex on the Beach. And fortunately, I was quick enough to say to that leader, they are being brainwashed all day, every day, by what they get in media and all of that stuff. If I can spend an hour a week brainwashing them the other way, then I'm going to do it. Brainwashing is happening. The question is, who's doing it? And they get all day, all week, the culture of this world. If I can have an hour a week and do some brainwashing with clean stuff, that's a good thing. I want to wash my brain with good stuff, with godly things. Because all day it's being polluted with other stuff. Daniel prayed 3 times a day. We need to spend time in the presence of God to wash our brain, to wash our spirit, to get us in the right place before Him. We need to meditate on His word. We need to spend time with His people. Because the culture of this world is invading all the time. And I want to wash my brain with the good things of God. Just really in conclusion, although I might be here a while yet, you know what it's like when we say in conclusion. Daniel and his friends show a fantastic example of what it means to be living in the world, but not of it. They are kingdom people influencing the world for the kingdom of God, not being influenced by the world. And the first key to that is knowing who they are. And for every one of us, and we'll be looking at that in our Connect groups this week, who am I? Maintaining our identity as children of God. Well, a couple of weeks back, Mary Jane and I were at a conference, and they had a guy, Pete Cunningham is his name. He's from Southport, up on the south coast, no, the northwest coast. What am I trying to say? West of Liverpool somewhere on the coast. And about 25 years ago, they had people living under the pier on the rough sleepers living under the pier in Southport, and he said, I must do something about it. And long story short, eventually he cashed in his pension of £6,000, bought a house, flat, I don't quite know what he bought, along with somebody else in the church who cashed in their thing as well. Between them, they had enough for a deposit, put it down, put some people in there. They've now got a charity called Green Pastures, which is enormous, and if you go and look at Green Pastures on the internet, you'll find it. They've already housed 1,500 rough sleepers as a result of him saying, I'm going to give my £6,000 pension. And it's growing so rapidly right now. By next year, probably will double that. It's just incredible what God is doing. Anyway, they had him there to talk to us and just encourage us. It was that after lunch session, so it's that sort of relaxing, listen to somebody tell his story. And he's a guy, and he's about 80 now, and I know him a little bit because my brother was in his church for quite a long time. And so he's there just telling his story. And this is what really, the one thing that he said that really struck home with me, he said, when I stand before God, and he was talking, you know, every day, you know, probably more often. I stand before God and say, God, I'm a miserable sinner. I'm a worm. Please forgive me. What do I do to deserve to be in your presence? And he says, and then I turn to the world. I say, I'm a child of God. I puff up my chest and I declare, I am the head, not the tail. I'm a child of God. This is who God made me to be. He says, I turn back to God and I say, I'm a miserable sinner. Please forgive me. I turn to the world. I say, I'm a child of God. I'm the head, not the tail. This is who I am. Because before God, we rely on Him for His mercy and grace. We rely on Him for forgiveness. We come to Him in humility. But before the world, we are His children. Excuse me. The key to keeping our identity and influencing the world is getting our relationship with Him as our first priority. Spending time in His presence, understanding who we are in Christ. Daniel did that 3 times a day. I think that's why he was there 65 years at the center of power of the greatest empire in the world at the time. Coming to God first, and then it's turning to the world, knowing who I am, who we are. I mean, spending time in the throne room of God. You know, Daniel spent time in the throne room of the king of the greatest empire in the world, but first of all, he spends time in the throne room of God. Ian's going to come, and we're going to sing together in a moment. We're consciously rejecting the culture of this world and consciously washing our brain with the good things of God, whatever is pure, whatever is holy, whatever is right, whatever is truthful. I can't remember it all. Think on these things. We're going to sing a song now, and I just felt like it was a fantastic way for us to declare, who am I that the highest king would welcome me? There's almost that element of Pete Cunningham coming and saying, God, I'm a worm. And then it says, I am a child of God. I am a child of God. So let's stand together. We're going to sing, if you're able to stand, and we're going to sing this song. But let's make it a declaration. But I want you to go from here knowing that if that's who we're going to be, then we have to wash our brain. We have to consciously make ourselves. We have to consciously do the things that change our brain, change our thinking to make them like Jesus. So we're going to sing together this song. Thanks, Ian.